I think it's important for us to get in this space of gratitude. And Eric is actually, you know, we talked about this one time, and it kind of seems like an obvious thing when you start your prayers. Well, how do you start to pray? A lot of the times I just pray the Lord's Prayer. I'm very like liturgical like that. I value like structure and everything. So I pray the Lord's Prayer, and Eric and I were talking one time, and I was like, how do you like start praying? And he's like, I always just start saying like thanks to God about these things. Like, thank you for my family, for my car, for my house, for the food in my house, for the clothes in my body. Like, and you just start, and if you start doing that, you'll realize it snowballs, and you just realize, wow, like you've done so much in my life, Lord. And you start realizing just how much God has done for you in spite of yourself. In spite of you and your efforts, God has done so much for us. And so let that be a good start to our years to remember that we will start with gratitude. Amen? All right, we'll get locked in. Has anyone thrown pottery before? And I don't mean like out of anger you threw pottery across the room. Has anyone thrown pottery like on a wheel? Okay, or have you like at least seen the movie Ghost with Patrick Swayze? So like you know what I'm talking about, right? Like just give me a head nod or like a yes. You know what throwing pottery is? Okay, cool. So you have like this big wheel and you like sit in front of this wheel and it has like this little basin and the wheel spins. You've got kind of like a little foot pedal down here, right? It's like an accelerator on a car and it makes the wheel go faster. So when I was in high school, my senior year, my second semester, my last class of the day. So my very last class of high school was pottery. And we were blessed enough to have like four different wheels in our pottery room. So the class would kind of rotate. So like every couple weeks you got to throw pottery. And so my pottery teacher, who was probably to this day one of the most patient people I've ever met in my life, because I was a punk little outspoken atheist and she was a believer and she loved me when I didn't deserve to be loved. But so she was teaching me how to throw pottery and she's like, okay, Mitchell, if you're going to throw pottery, the most important and crucial thing you do when you're throwing pottery is centering your clay. You have to make sure that it's centered on the wheel. Otherwise, you can't make anything because it'll just fly all over the place. And so she's showing me, you take your big lump of clay and you kind of throw it down on the center, and then she would take probably 2 or 3 minutes, and she would like rise it up, and then she would like flatten it back down, and she'd rise it up, and she'd kind of move it over, and she'd flatten it back down, and she'd do that like 2 or 3 minutes, and she's like, okay, see, now it's nice and centered, and it's flat, and now you can start shaping a vase or whatever you're going to do, and I'm like, yeah, I get that. I'm going to go ahead and start. So I was just, bah, looks good enough to me, and you start going, and you start lifting it up, and like, it might look centered at first because you're like looking at the wheel, you throw it down, you're like, yeah, it looks pretty good. But as you start raising it up and as you start trying to form a lip on a vase, if any of you have ever thrown pottery, you realize it starts doing this real quick. And then if you do it too fast, it'll just throw itself off the wheel. And so she would be like, Mitchell, you have to, I'm throwing clay across the classroom. And she's like, Mitchell, you have to center the clay first. And I'm like, yeah, but in my head, what I'm thinking is, whether the clay is centered or not, I'll add some more water, make it more malleable, or I'll just use my brute force and I'll move it to where it needs to go. And she's saying like, it doesn't matter what you do. She's like, Mitchell, I'm a professional. I've been doing this my entire life. It does not matter. I know all the skills. I know all the tips. I know all the tricks. I can use more water or more force or a new tool. If my clay is not centered, I cannot throw properly. It doesn't matter how much you think you're going to do something differently to manipulate it. If it's not centered, it's not going to work. And I learned that, and eventually I made some beautiful pottery. But it took me a while because I was stubborn. And I feel like a lot of the times with our New Year's resolutions, it's kind of the same thing. Is that we'll tell ourselves we need to like eat less, or at least eat better. We need to exercise more. We need to scroll less, which no matter who you are and how much screen time you have, you need to scroll less, period. But we have these ambitions and we make these resolutions. But I think a lot of the times making these resolutions are well-intended, but they're not focusing on the core issue of our life. And so when we say, man, I need to scroll less. Well, why do you need to scroll less? Do you need to scroll less so that you can pat yourself on the back every week when you get that screen report and you go, look at me, I'm 4% down from last week. Look how good I am. Or do you wanna lose weight so that you can look good in that bathing suit and go, man, I'm pretty attractive. Like, is that the motivation behind it? Because if that's the motivation, that's the reason why those resolutions only last for about a month or two, is because it's all based on your own vanity or it's all based on your own method of control. and you're missing out on the real reason that these things are important. I would argue that scrolling too much, yes, is not a good thing. And that, yeah, it would probably be good for you to put apps on your phone to like slow you down from scrolling 24 hours a day. But at the same time, I want to pressure you to ask yourself, is it because you can't stand to not have your brain distracted and stimulated? Because if you sat for a moment with yourself, you might have to confront some things about yourself that you don't want to confront. Working out is great, and you should jog and like do all those fun things. My workout is working out a way not to work out. But if you want to work out, is the motivation because you need to feel like you need to look a certain way for somebody else, or you need to put on a certain figure for somebody else, or you feel like you have worth and value in the way that you look apart from what God has said about you? Because that is the wrong motivation, and that is just attempting to manipulate the clay without centering it on the main issue. And maybe this illustration will help you. For example, if somebody has blurry vision, they start saying like, man, I can't see very well. My eyes are kind of blurry. And so they start putting eye drops in, or they start getting glasses. And it kind of helps for a little bit. But come to find out months later, they've got a brain tumor that's swelling against the back of their eye and causing them to have blurry vision. It doesn't matter the amount of eye drops you put in or glasses prescription you have. You're not treating the main issue. You're treating a symptom of the problem. And that's never going to fix the core of it. Matthew 6:22, and for those of you who are flippers, we're going to be hanging out in Matthew 6 and 7 today, so you don't have to flip very much. Matthew 6, verse 22 says, "The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness?" And it's appropriate, you can substitute the word eye for heart here if it helps you understand like culturally, contextually what they're saying. Is like if your heart is bad, your whole body is bad. And the way that we think about your heart, if your heart is corrupt, everything will be bad. And so a lot of the times in our spiritual life, we spend time treating our symptoms rather than actually treating our root problem. So we say, oh, I need to read my Bible more rather than recognizing that we need to know who God is more. Or, oh, I need to like... I need to pray more rather than I need to spend more time with the Lord. Give you another example. When I was in India doing missions work, we were doing medical missions, and we would go to New Delhi with these doctors, and we'd buy up all this medicine, and then we'd go way up into the mountains, like in the Himalayas, and we would go into these remote villages, and we would do all sorts of stuff. I was in charge of eyeglasses, and I would do like, you know, eye tests with people and point and like, good, not good, yes, no. And every person that came to me, almost every single person had a little piece of paper written in English, and it said acetaminophen and ibuprofen. And I was like, why are they all asking for acetaminophen and ibuprofen, Tylenol and Advil? I'm like, why are they all asking for this? Literally, like they kept coming and kept coming and kept coming, and every single one of them would be like, just hand it to me. And so finally I leaned over to my doctor, the doctor who was there, and I said, hey, why are they all asking for acetaminophen and ibuprofen? He goes, I'll show you. And so he called a few of them over there, and he asked them in Hindi, he goes, how much water do you drink a day? And they go like this. And I was like, what does that mean? He goes, he like takes a glass, and he holds it up to them and says, how much water do you drink? A little cup, like that big. And they said, this much. They live in the Himalayas, so they're at an elevation higher than we live at. They work outside all day long, and so they have headaches. And so now they want acetaminophen and ibuprofen to treat their headaches. Why do they actually have headaches? They're dehydrated. So it doesn't matter how much acetaminophen and ibuprofen you give them. It might bring them relief temporarily, but they're not treating the main problem. And as we know, if you were to just take Tylenol every day of your life, you may actually cause more damage than good to your body without ever actually treating the root cause of the issue. And that's the scary thing about making these resolutions, is that how many times have you made the same resolution year after year and seen no shift in change? Or for me, you know, I'm real bad. I've done crash dieting like over and over again. Like anytime I'm like, man, I need to shed a lot of weight, time to go on keto, which there's nothing wrong with keto, but it is a nice way to lose 10 pounds really fast. And so you all of a sudden go on this crash diet. And so then you crash and you're skinny, and then you come back up here and you're chubby again, and you crash and you're skinny, and you come back up here and you're chubby again. What is the real issue? I need to learn how to develop healthy eating habits, not I need to learn how to crash my way into fitting into my skinny jeans. Okay, that's not the appropriate response. That's just treating the symptom rather than treating the core issue. Let's jump over to Matthew 7:21, one of my favorite verses in all of Scripture. It's so good. It says, this is Jesus speaking. These are red letters. It says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. And on that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? Did we not cast out demons in your name and do mighty works in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. Said over and over again, this is like one of the scariest verses in the Bible, but there's an interesting part that we need to dissect if we're going to understand what it means to like actually do the will of the Father. Because it says, not all will enter into the kingdom, but those who do my will. So Jesus is saying, you need to do the will of the Father to enter the kingdom. But in the very next verse, we see people who are casting out demons, who are prophesying, who are doing miraculous wonders, arguably doing the will of the Father, right? But then Jesus calls them doers of lawlessness. So how do we reconcile that? Like, if we're supposed to do the will of God, but then these people are doing the will of God and they're not doing the right thing, what are we supposed to do? If you look at verse 23, Jesus gives us the answers. He says, I declare to them, I never knew you. Jesus highlights here that connection is paramount over works. Now, there need to be works in your life. You should have evidence of change. That is all throughout Scripture. There is no doubt that if you are entering into the kingdom of God, if you are walking with the Holy Spirit, your life should look different than it did when you were not saved or when you weren't walking with the Lord. Your life should look different year from year because you should be growing with the Lord. In John, it says, if you are with the Spirit, you will produce fruit. That's no like you might or you probably should. No, you will. It is a natural outcome of being with the Spirit. And so there's no argument that works are important, but if you don't have connection to the Father, it is useless. If your clay is not centered on the wheel, it doesn't matter how hard you push it or how much water you add or what tools you use, you're not centered. You're never going to create what God is asking you to create. You're going to throw clay all over the place and be frustrated over and over again when that pot collapses and collapses and collapses. And it's important that the following verses are looked at in tandem. If you look at verse 24, it says, everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat against the house and it fell. And great was the fall of it. I think typically the interpretation of this verse is like, you know, if you follow Jesus, you go to heaven. If you don't, you go to hell. And I think that's like an appropriate, like surface level interpretation. But if you look at the fact that it follows this direction that Jesus just gave, saying like, yeah, you did all these great things, but I never knew you, so away from me. And then proceeds to tell this story about like, everyone who listens to me, they will build their house on a rock. The reality is that we're all building something. Notice he doesn't say that those who are listening to me, they build their house and those who aren't doing anything. No. We're all building a kingdom. We're all building something. It's whether or not you're building your house for the sake of the Lord or you're building your house for the sake of your kingdom. And when you're building for your kingdom, when you're making these resolutions so you can pat yourself on the back or you can talk to your friend and tell them how good you are at this, or you can stand in the mirror and feel good about yourself, you're building your house on sand. None of these things are wrong. None of these desires are incorrect, but when they're rooted in the wrong things, they are built on sand, and ultimately, at the end of the day, they're going to fall because they're for your own glory and for your own kingdom. We don't show up to God and say, Lord, look at all this wonderful stuff I have. Like, let me show you what I can do with all these talents and all these skills and all these resources and all these abilities. No, we show up to the Lord and we say, Lord, look at all of these things I have. What do you want to do with them? What do you want to do with me? I want to build my house on the rock and the foundation of you. I don't want to create a kingdom for myself that's ultimately just going to crumble. So Lord, keep me from making these these promises and keep me from making these resolutions just to disappoint myself year over year over year over year. I don't know about you, but I stood there on New Year's Eve reflecting on my life a year ago, and there were a couple things I was like, I really wish I wasn't like that still. Man, I really wish that I had changed more here. I really wish I was skinnier than I am right now because of all this cheese and cake I've eaten over the past 2 weeks. But again, if I then go, okay, I know how to fix this. I'll just go on a ketogenic diet. I'll cut carbs out. I'll shed weight. I'll feel a little bit better for a couple weeks. I might wear a pair of jeans to make myself feel better. And then, you know, by summertime, I'll start coasting back up rather than actually changing the root of my behavior, which is like I have an unhealthy relationship with the way I eat. I have no self-discipline in the way that I eat. It's just food is pleasure rather than fuel for me. Or maybe for you, again, it's just scroll, 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 because you can't stand to be bored or you can't stand to sit alone in the presence of God. And that's the thing. If you're scrolling, you're stealing attention from your family. You're stealing attention from your friends. You're stealing attention away from these things that need your attention. For those of you who are parents and who are married, you more than anyone. Like, I've never felt more guilty than scrolling on my phone and asking me, Dad, will you play with me? And me going, not now. As if, like, you could zoom out and view your life. You know, you can see that your life from beginning to end, and you look at that portion and you go, I'm not real proud of that moment, right? I chose these stupid videos that will mean absolutely nothing at the end of time over feeding into my son's life. Over teaching him what it means to be a man, what it means to play, what it means to like have love and affection and care. Yet I'll sit here and I'll scroll on TikTok or YouTube for useless things about where to find the best Chinese food in Los Angeles, and I don't even live there. Like, it's senseless. And I think sometimes we have to ask ourselves more than just like, I should probably scroll less. Again, why am I doing this? Is it because that I'm afraid to put that phone down, to go sit in silence and seek after the Lord because I'm afraid either it's going to feel weird, I don't really know what to do, or even worse, I'm afraid he is going to speak to me and he might bring something up that I am not ready to confront. And that's the honesty that we need to have with ourselves is why do we do these things? What are we actually trying to avoid? What are we afraid we're going to miss out on? Let's flip over to Psalm 27, verse 4, and we'll close here. Band, believe it or not, you guys can go ahead and come up here. As I was preparing for this message and Bree and I were praying about it, I had a completely different, if you ask our team, I had a completely different thing going on, but like typical Mitch, I changed my mind. And I'm also not one to do topical stuff. And so I think like, oh, it's New Year's. We talk about New Year's resolutions. That's stupid and cheesy and on the nose and boring. But I felt super strongly to talk about New Year's resolutions because of the way I've discussed it today is that there's nothing wrong with them if you address them properly. But I even feel like culturally, it's the stereotype that like everyone ruins them anyway. So like, what's the point of even making resolutions, right? Like for anyone, who didn't even make resolutions? No shame, just raise your hand. You didn't even do it. Yeah, why? Because you're like, who cares? What's the point, right? What's the point? And to some degree, I agree with you. Like just getting a subscription to Ironworks only to be mad in July when you've paid $30 a month and shown up twice is dumb. Like, that's foolish. I know a couple people personally who have an app on their phone that like you can give yourself time limits on how long you use that app, but you can just click give me more time and it just gives you more time. I know some of you are laughing because you know I'm talking to you. Like, it's kind of pointless to put this stuff if you're just gonna like step around it every time. And so yeah, don't make those resolutions. Don't download that app on your phone to block those apps if you're just gonna use them. Don't go get a subscription to Ironworks if you're not gonna work out. Don't download an app on your phone that's gonna track calories if you're not gonna like change your eating habits. I would implore you, what would be far more beneficial to you would to be recenter your life on the Lord today, whether you've started resolutions or you're not doing resolutions, recenter your life on the Lord so that when New Year's of 2026 going to 2027 rolls around, you can sit and reflect and go, wow, like, Lord, not only did maybe I lost a couple pounds, maybe I'm on my phone a little less, but Lord, I'm closer to you. And it's because I'm closer to you that these things happened. Not just because I have this great willpower, because you don't. I don't care how strong-willed you are. There's a man in this room who's probably the most strong-willed person I know, and even he probably isn't strong enough to go 365 days without breaking a day of dedication to something. So let's read Psalm 27, verse 4, and let this be your focus for 2026. Is one thing I have asked for of the Lord, the thing that I will seek after, is that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and inquire in his temple. And I think that's like beautiful language, and I'm sure some of you are sitting here going, I don't know what the heck that means. That is your resolution, to understand what it means to dwell in the house of the Lord, to gaze upon his beauty, and to inquire in his temple. That's what your resolution should be. To learn what it means to seek after the Lord, have a quiet time, to know what it means to just sit in prayer and not just talk to the Lord, but listen to the Lord. Let him guide your heart. And even that phrase, you're like, I don't know what that means, Mitch. Then you need to figure out a way to make it happen. It says back in Matthew, it says, where your heart is, your treasure is also. Where your treasure is, your heart is also. If you want something, if you truly want it, you will seek after it. You will find it. And if you want to know the Lord more, you will. Lord says, those who seek me with their whole heart will find me. And for you, that may look like, look, you're already at church on the first Sunday of the year. Some people are not. Look at you. You're already better off. You got a head start. But for you, maybe that means like getting involved. Maybe that means showing up on Sunday and help set up. For a lot of you, I would argue that means getting in a group, because you need to be involved in Christian community. Like showing up and listening to me talk, like even on my best days, I make this much impact on your spiritual life. Like you might get a good, wow, that was good. That was encouraging. Mitch gave me like a good word there, or gave me a good verse to focus on. It is this much of your spiritual life. It is a drop in the bucket. You need to make investments outside of Sunday, outside of just this moment, outside of just raising your hands during worship. Get involved in Christian community with people who can encourage you, who can show you what it means to dwell in the house. Go hang out with people who have done this and can mentor you. We have people all over this room who would love nothing more than to show you what it means to follow the Lord, to show you what it means to seek after his face, and to show you what it means to inquire in his temple. There are people all over this room who will pray for you, who will walk with you through these weird challenges and weird questions. Do not wait another year, and I'm sitting here telling you the same message again, and you're rolling your eyes going, ah, here we go again. Here I am again, another year later, and no different than I was a year ago. Or for some of you, no different than I was a decade ago. Make today the day that you commit to recentering your life on Jesus. Stop trying to wrestle with the clay. Stop trying to wrestle with more water or trying to invent new tools to try to fix it. No, stop, scrape the clay off, recenter, and do it right. And he will, I promise you, he will reveal himself to you when you seek after him.